Hi everybody, welcome to Core Life Spiritual Weather Report. It's February 27th, 2022, and this is Brad, and I'm here in the United States still. I've been here for a while, and my beloved Leslie is in South Africa, and I want to welcome all of you. Welcome to everyone who's new to Core Light, and welcome to those who are longtime Core Lighters, and wow, what a time we are in, huh? You know, there's so much that we could talk about, and last month we talked about the tectonic plates that are shifting on the inner planes, and I talked about feeling some really significant, what I call disturbances in the force, and that was true for us as a collective as well as individuals, and we talked about several spiritual masters who had left their bodies in January and how when that happens, a war can break out. And here we are. And we also talked about when spiritual masters leave their bodies, it doesn't mean that the light is lost. You know, it hasn't gone out. It also means that the rest of us are receiving an invitation to hold more light. And we are being invited into stepping more into our own awakening. So I think this bears repeating right now, given that a war has broken out. And let's all just remember that this is our invitation to holding more light for the earth, each of us, and to stepping into a higher spiritual vibration. And we'll talk a lot more about that today. We'll talk about how to do that. I've received a lot of communications, questions, comments about Russia's invasion of Ukraine. And I know how hard this is for everyone. And I know emotions are running very high. And a lot of people are feeling hopeless and, you know, people in deep sadness and despair about it. And so we're going to talk about all of this today. We're going to take a deeper look at what's going on in the world and why and how to use this time to accelerate our own growth in consciousness and not just to cope, but to thrive, even though the times are changing so fast and it's very challenging. And we have something very special planned for today. We have a guest speaker with us. And before I tell you who it is, I first want to tell you why I invited her to join us. I know some of you are probably aware, but maybe you aren't, that we just experienced a very auspicious date, numerologically speaking. It was February 2nd. It was 2-2-2022. And it's not just all those twos that make it so special, because it was on that day that the United States entered its first Pluto return. And I know some of you'll know what a Pluto return is and what that means. But for those of you who don't, I would like to just take a moment to describe it to you before we get started today. And the way I understand it is, well, let's first talk about what a return is. In our personal astrology, when we have a planet return, it means that it's returned to the same place in the sky where it was when we were born. So, for example, Saturn takes approximately 28 years to go around the sun, and so our Saturn return happens around the age of 28, you know, give or take a few years. So for most people, if you think back to what was happening in your life around that time from about, you know, age 26 to 30 or so, you'll realize something major was going on. And I remember my Saturn return really well, and it's a good example, so I'll share it with you. I was at my first meditation retreat on my 28th birthday, and I was learning how to meditate, and I was having all these blowout spiritual experiences and visions and all kinds of awakenings, and it was then that I decided that my life was going to be about meditation and following a spiritual path. So I know for other people, it, you know, sometimes it's when you get married or when you meet the love of your life or you have a child or you might start a new career path, or it's a time when you're making some big decision about something significant in your life. And the key is that it sets a course for the next 28-year cycle. So there's an exercise we can all do, which is very powerful. And if you've never done it, it's great. If you're over 30, what you do is you look back at what's happening for you in your late 20s. And you try to remember what major event was going on in your life. And the decisions that we make at that time have a significant impact on our lives. So you try to discern what decisions you were making in your late 20s and what course you were setting for yourself. And then also, depending on what age you are, to be aware that in your late 50s, you're going to be going through your second Saturn return, where you might also experience a milestone of some kind in your life, and you might also be making some decisions that are going to set the course for the final third of your life. And so if you're already over 60, then, you know, you can do this exercise of looking at the decisions you were making in your late 50s, and you can see the trajectory of the final 28-year cycle of your life. And if you're under 30, then it's very, very empowering to know that the decisions that you make in your late 20s will have this significant effect, and it will shape the next 28-year cycle of your life. And you'll be setting your course in some form. And I've done a very informal survey. I like to do when I meet somebody. Sometimes we'll get into this, and I'll ask them what they were doing in their late 20s and what decisions were they making. And inevitably, it's like almost to a person. Very, very rarely you meet somebody for whom this doesn't apply, but almost everybody can remember something that was happening in their first Saturn return that set that trajectory for them for the next 28 years. So anyway, I wanted to give you that example of the Saturn return because I think it's so important and it's empowering to know about, but also because it kind of sums up what we're going to talk about today with the Pluto return of the United States. Pluto takes about 250 years, not quite, less than 250 years to go around the sun. So people don't experience their Pluto returns. Well, at least not yet, they don't. I think there will be a time when humans live very long lives. But for now, it's only countries that experience their Pluto returns. And since the U.S. was, you know, quote-unquote, born on July 4, 1776, we're just beginning to tap into our Pluto return here in the U.S. And in case you're not familiar with the planet Pluto, what Pluto represents is the unconscious, the hidden, the aspects that are deeply buried in our psyche. So the god Pluto is the Roman god who previously had been the ancient Greek god Hades. So Pluto, Hades, same god. He is considered the god of the underworld. And for many people today, that seems scary. You know, we hear the word Hades, and we think of hell and the underworld, and it sounds scary. And that's just a modern religious interpretation of it. It's not how the ancients viewed it, and it's not what it's about. The unconscious mind is simply what's hidden. It's what's below the surface of the mind. The conscious mind is the tip of the iceberg, and the unconscious is what's beneath it. And it's this vast repository of ideas and desires and dreams and our primal instincts and our weaknesses and our limitations and so many things. And so when we try to suppress any of those things in order to adapt to maybe other people's expectations of us and how we should be behaving and to conform to cultural norms, it becomes what we can call our shadow side. And so the shadow side is not bad or wrong or, you know, in religious terms, sinful or anything like that. It has nothing to do with what we're taught in our modern religious culture about hell, for example, or damnation or, you know, any kind of nonsense like that. Pluto, when Pluto appears in our life, it's an opportunity. It's a wonderful opportunity to take a look at the hidden aspects of ourselves. It's about shining the light in the dark areas. And so we experience enormous growth when we learn to make friends with Pluto. And we can learn to receive his gifts, whatever gifts he comes to offer us. And so today, I've invited our dear friend Stephanie Austin to join us and to talk with us specifically about the Pluto return that the United States has just entered and what that means for each of us personally, and not just for Americans, but for everybody, no matter what country you're living in, where you're from. I know we have a lot of international people participating in these calls, and yet America's Pluto return affects everybody on the planet because the United States is at the epicenter of so much of what's happening in the world today. And I'll introduce Stephanie after our guided meditation. I'm sorry, just give me a second. My phone is doing something here. Pardon me. Oh, gosh, did I get disconnected? Looks like I've been disconnected. No, I see that I'm still there. So forgive me for a moment. No, I still see I'm connected. Okay. Apologies about the technology. Maybe Stephanie will talk to us about technology. Okay. I'm putting my phone aside again. Forgive me. Where was I? Get back to my train of thought here. So I'll introduce Stephanie after our guided meditation, and I'll open up her microphone then. Let me just share just a couple things more before we start our guided meditation. In case you might be new to these calls, here's how they work. I start with the guided meditation. And then there's time where I speak about the prevailing energies that are affecting us and also about the spiritual principles that are most helpful for us right now. And then we have time for some questions and answers. And then we usually close our session with a brief prayer or a meditation or an exercise or whatever we have time for. And if you need to leave before the call ends, you can always listen to the recording later. We send out the link to our email list, and it's also posted on YouTube. So let me just give you a little glimpse of some of the topics we're going to talk about today. And I've got a list here, so excuse me while I get this list. As I said, we're going to talk about the United States Pluto return, what it means to us personally, as well as in the big picture, archetypally, astrologically as well. We're also going to talk about emotions and why being emotionally literate is critical in times like this and why being emotionally illiterate is so dangerous. We'll talk about the radical changes happening in the world and the historical patterns that are repeating themselves. We're going to look at what's ahead for us in the next few months. And we're going to look at what are some practical things that we can do to stay on our surfboards and thrive at this very intense and momentous time. And as I said, a number of people sent in questions about Russia's invasion of Ukraine. And so I think some of the specifics of that I might save for the Q&A time at the end. Also, just quickly, before we start our guided meditation, I just wanted to make a couple of quick housekeeping kind of announcements. And I have mentioned this the last couple of months, that we do have some exciting plans for the year ahead here at CoreLight. We're installing our new learning management system for our online courses. And it's beautiful. It's impeccable. I'm really excited about it. It's the same system that we use for the course that I taught last year called For the Love of Animals with my friend and colleague, Anna Breitenbach. So if you took that course, you know how beautiful and impeccable it was presented. And so we're planning some new courses in our new format. And The first course that I'm going to offer will be Spiritual Warrior Training, and that's probably going to begin in June, so be on the lookout for that. It's one of our foundational courses that Leslie put together many years ago, and it is timeless, and it's extremely powerful, so I'm very excited about that. And I just want to say thank you to you all for bearing with us as we've gone through some massive changes here at Core Light over the past few years, and many people have been asking for a long time about the courses. So I just want to thank you for your patience, and just know that they're going to be coming. We're going to be unfolding a lot of courses over the next couple of years. So a lot of plans. Also, we're planning some kind of membership community. We're not exactly sure when that will happen or what it will look like, but it'll have, exclusive content, and there'll be probably some video offerings and things like that. Okay, so without further ado, let's go ahead and start our guided meditation for today. So I invite you to sit back and get quiet, relax, close your eyes, and just get comfortable. Take a few long, slow, deep breaths. Just letting go. Breathing in the light that surrounds you. Breathing out any tension that your body might be holding on to. Breathing in the present moment and breathing out any worries about the past or the future. Any concerns about anything. Let's just continue this breathing for a few moments. So I'll just speak a little bit while you keep breathing. Long, slow, deep inhales, and let's make the exhale a little bit longer and slower than the inhale. And if you've been on these calls before, as you know, at some level of her being, Leslie is with us, overlighting these calls, and there's a transmission of healing energy that comes through these calls from another level. So I invite you to be meditative throughout the call, not just during the guided meditation, and receive this transmission. It happens even when we're talking, but it's much easier to feel in the guided meditation. And whether you're with us live today or listening to the recording, it doesn't matter. We are all part of a field of love, field of one mind. We're all connected at that level. It's a level beyond time and space. And so we invite you to tune into these other levels beyond time and space. It's a field where we're all connected in unity, in heart, and in love. And we feel it as we relax. And the deep breathing really helps us to relax, so that's why we like to start with a little bit of deep breathing. And we all receive the transmission of light that comes through the calls. And it doesn't matter if you actually feel it or not, it's still happening. Nobody's doing anything to you. This is just a field of love that surrounds us. It's healing energy. We're tapping into it. And you can just choose to relax and to receive it if you want it. all you need to do, if you're new to this, is you simply relax and you just set the intention that you'd like to receive it. And it will happen, even if you're not feeling it. Deep breathing. Let's start our muscular relaxation from head to toes. I invite you to visualize a warm, viscous liquid pouring over the top of your head like honey, feeling how it just relaxes all the muscles that it touches. So feel this honey pouring over your scalp, relaxing your scalp, pouring over your forehead and your ears, over your eyebrows, relaxing your eyeballs, temples, nose, cheeks, mouth, your jaw, the back of your head, just letting go, completely relaxing, relaxing your neck and shoulders, and your arms all the way down to the fingertips. Remembering your breathing. Breathing long, slow, and deep. And feel this warm honey pouring over your shoulders, relaxing your chest and your upper back. Pouring over your torso, relaxing your stomach and your lower back. Relaxing your pelvis, the whole pelvic region. Your legs all the way down to the toes. Deeply, deeply letting go. And I will be quiet for a few moments while we do this scan one more time from head to toes. Just continue your breathing and look for any place in your body where you might still be holding on to some tension, and just gently, lovingly breathe light into those areas. And with the exhale, breathe out the tension. Just continuing to breathe, deeply relaxing. I'm aware we're especially wound up emotionally, a very emotional time right now. There's a lot of fear going around, a lot of tension, stress. So just relaxing is so important. Relaxation is the foundation of the enlightening of our consciousness. So we forget how important relaxation is, but some people say that enlightenment is just a very, very deep relaxation. So let's breathe in the light and breathe out any fear that you might be feeling in your body, any tension, any worry. You can see it pouring out of you with the exhale as like a gray smoke. Breathing in golden white light. Breathing out this cloud of worry, fear, tension, stress, whatever it is being held in your body, you might feel other emotions. You might feel anger or sadness, despair, hopelessness. Whatever you're feeling, just breathe it out and see it as a like a gray black smoke. And watch it as it drifts off to the horizon, slowly disappearing over the horizon into the sunset. Breathing in this field of love and light that surrounds us, and filling yourself up with that energy. So you can continue this exercise. Let's also, while we continue breathing, and especially breathing in the light and breathing out the emotions and the stress, let's put our attention on the root chakra, which is at the base of the spine, for those of you who might be new to this. And just gently put your attention there. When you do that, you can feel that whole area of the root chakra relax and open just by putting your attention there. The root chakra is between the anus and the genitals. You don't have to do anything. You just have to put your attention there. Just be aware. And you'll feel a relaxation happening. And then let's drop our grounding cords from the root chakra down into the center of the earth, wrapping our grounding cord around the center of the earth, the core of the earth. You can visualize it as an iron crystal or maybe gold. Just feel how, when you do that, there's a feeling of anchoring, feeling of grounding in the body, this connection we have with Mother Earth. So just breathe into that and relax into her embrace. Feel Mother Earth supporting you from beneath in the form of the chair and the floor. And just let go. Allow gravity to pull you towards her very gently and feel her holding you up like you're like a little baby in the arms of its mother. Just letting go. You're perfectly safe and warm right now, perfectly held. Nothing to worry about. Nowhere to go, nothing to do. Just being. Just relaxing. Just letting go. Feeling the grace of the earth, the gift that we're given of her energy, supports us so much. So allow this Mother Earth energy to come up into your body and fill you up. Feel yourself as part of the earth, which we are. And feel your whole body inside the earth, like the surface of the earth is just above your head. Just feel how grounding that is. If this is difficult for you, if you're somehow struggling for any reason, that's okay. You don't have to follow that piece if there's something about it that doesn't work for you. Uh, Sometimes if we have felt disconnected from the earth for a long time, it might seem a little scary to merge with the earth so much. In our system of separation, we're taught to be separate from the earth, that we are separate from the earth. So it can seem strange and it can seem challenging sometimes. For many people, it's very natural. It's easy to just relax and merge with the earth. And if you would like that, you can just set the intention that that's what you'd like, and it will happen one day. So let's take this earth energy up into our body through the soles of the feet and all the way up the torso, up the core of our being. The core of our being looks like a tube of golden white light that runs right in front of the spine from head down to root, from crown to root. Let's pull the earth energy up the core all the way up to the top of the head and out the top of the head. Feeling that tube of golden white light going out above the head and out into formless space, connecting with the celestial realms. Father Sky energy. And let's allow that beautiful celestial energy to rain down upon us in the form of golden white light, filling us up. You can open your crown like a funnel opening up and out. It sits on the top of your head, like a crown that a king or a queen would wear, and just feel this energy filling up your funnel, pouring it into your body, filling up your aura. Just breathing and relaxing into this beautiful warmth, this energy of light and love. Allow it to come in and just give you a sense of deep, deep inner peace, knowing that you're perfectly safe, perfectly held. Just breathing it in and relaxing deeply. Still breathing out any tension that you might be feeling in the body. Letting it drift away to the horizon. So I invite you to continue this filling up. You can fill up from above the celestial energy and beneath with the earth energy, just allowing your whole body to fill up with this beautiful golden white light and love and healing energy. And I'll say a prayer and invocation for our call today while you do this. We call on the Great Spirit, Divine Mother, Father God, the Self that we all are. We call on all the guides and teachers that surround us in the highest love and light. We ask that you please join us on this call, join our sacred circle, wrap us up in a cocoon, beautiful healing, love, and light. Guide our conversation into the highest love and the highest wisdom. Hold our hands as we walk into our soul's highest purpose at this time. And we give thanks. We give thanks for the opportunity to gather together today to fill up with love and light and to share this very, very special time in community. And again, it doesn't matter if we're listening to this live or a recording in the future. We're still one community. We're still receiving the same field, participating in the same field. And we give thanks for these beautiful bodies that we get to wear for a few years here on this beautiful planet Earth, beautiful blue, fragile blue planet. And especially for the gift of being here at this amazing time, the changing of an age, being given the opportunity to help birth a new paradigm of love and heart-centeredness. As challenging as that may be at times, we're still grateful. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Alalaho. And so now I invite you to slowly come back into the room if you want to. You can stay just deep in meditation if you like. But if you have to multitask or if you want to come back, just slowly start to wiggle your fingers and toes and move your limbs. Slowly begin to open your eyes. Oh. Okay, well, welcome again, everybody. If you are attuning live and you might have missed the first few minutes, let me just share with you. I'm very excited to tell you that we have a wonderful guest speaker today. It's our friend Stephanie Austin, who is a world-renowned professional astrologer. She has a very awakened perspective, and Leslie and I have known Stephanie for at least a couple of decades. I actually don't remember how long, but she's been a guest speaker on our calls many times. And Stephanie's website is ecoastrology.com. And I'd like to welcome Stephanie now. Let me find her on the call. Stephanie, if you could maybe press. There you are. I see you. Never mind. I was going to ask you to raise your hand, but let's see if that works. Stephanie, are you with us?
Yes.
Hi, hello. Welcome.
Thank you for having me. My pleasure and honor to be with you all.
Oh. Yeah. Well, there's so much happening in the world right now, and I got such a clear message. You've got to invite Stephanie to be a guest speaker this week, because especially so much happening in astrology that explains what we're going through and can support us as, you know, we go through these challenging times. And as I said at the very beginning of the call, we have several things to talk about, but one of them specifically is this Pluto return for the United States. So Stephanie, I wonder if you could share with us your perspective of what the United States Pluto return is all about.
Certainly. Just a very brief introduction to give it a context. As you mentioned earlier, astrology is very real. We experience it every day in our lives. It's like a different kind of weather. So we can think of it as these archetypal energies or forces that we're experiencing all the time. Everything's changing. Astrology is essentially a language of energy, a language of light that is encoded to assist our evolution. It reminds us that everything's connected, everything is changing, as above, so below. And what are called transits, the movements of the planets across the sky, generates these matrices of energies, these sacred geometries that shape the evolution of consciousness. So we think of the planets as more as archetypal forces. There's currently a series being offered, you could mention, or maybe post that link later in the chat for people to check out. There's a series called The Changing of the Gods that speaks directly to these archetypal forces and how they've played out through history, based on a very wonderful book by Richard Tarnas called Cosmos and Psyche. So everything is moving, everything is changing, and countries have charts just as we have charts. Our charts, our birth charts are, you could say, a map of our karma and our dharma, what we came to learn and what we came to share, what we came to be. And so this, the United States has its birth chart. If we use July 4th, 1776 as its birth date, it's is experiencing something called a Pluto return, which you mentioned earlier, being the return of a planet to the exact place in the sky where it was at the birth of a country or a person, in this case, the United States. And any return, a solar return, once a month we have a new moon, once a year we have a, you know, a revolution of the Earth around the sun. There's many, many cycles going concurrently. But any return symbolizes the ending or close of one major cycle and the initiation to the next level, or the potential to go to the next level. It's a completion. It's one round of the wheel, one turn of the sacred wheel, and ideally a spiral going to the next level. So with Pluto, as you mentioned, it relates to the shadow, relates to power, relates to evolutionary forces. In a country's chart, it represents how we deal with power. And in this country's chart, it is in the sign of Capricorn and the second house, which gives more layers of meaning. So the Capricorn part deals with institutions of all kinds, governments, authority, regulation, laws, policies, economics, those forms that deal with large scale numbers. It's Capricorn is a third earth sign, so it deals with tangible resources, you know, like oil, gas, and so on. And it also deals with those things that affect us all, water, the air, the environment, of course. So Capricorn at its best deals with stewardship, with the responsible use of resources, the responsible use of power. Its shadow side is the opposite of that, the misuse of power. Imperialism, patriarchy, corporate domination, environmental devastation, racism, and so on, all the different issues that we're dealing with right now. So at the Pluto return, we're given an opportunity to review how far we've come since the birth of this country, the initiation of its intentions, and to make course corrections, to see what needs to be released, reformed, shifted in order for us to go to this next level. Okay? It's a process. It's a very long cycle, 248 years. And because it's such a long cycle, there's something called precession. I don't want to get too technical, but everything is moving. And because it's such a long cycle, this Pluto return, technically you can consider it in place exactly for this year if you want to use the dates February 22nd, July 16th, and December 30th, or not, those, that's 2024. February 20th, July 11th, and December 28th of this year would be the exact times given our ordinary reference points. But with precession correction, there's a good argument that it continues for the next couple of years through the end of 2024. And in any case, however we measure it, it's definitely more than just 1 year, right? Because we're talking about a long process of change. Just like spring doesn't happen overnight on March 21st, the Pluto return doesn't happen in just 1 year. It starts to come in for a number of weeks before. And so it's a decade-long process. And you could say it actually began when Pluto moved into Capricorn in 2008. And you can recall that was a momentous year, you know, the economic crisis, the banking bailouts, our first African-American president, a number of big shifts occurred that year that coincide with these archetypal forces. So that's one piece of it. And if we add in the layer of it being in the second house in the U.S. chart, in astrology, we have these sections called houses. If you look at a chart, it looks like a pizza with 12 slices. And the section that deals with the second house speaks to values, resources, what we ground on. On a personal level, it's our self-value, our sense of self-worth and self-esteem, how we manage our relationship to money on a mundane level, and also our relationship to our talents and resources, our inner gifts, the assets that we were born with that we can capitalize on.
Stephanie, we've lost you. Okay, Stephanie, you dropped away. My apologies, everybody. Looks like Stephanie dropped off, so we'll wait for her to call back in. So, okay, while we wait for Stephanie, let me just go back to my notes. There were some other things I wanted to talk with you about today. So I wanted to talk today also about emotions. And I wanted specifically to talk about why being emotionally literate is critical in times like this that we're in right now, and why being emotionally illiterate is actually very dangerous. I think first, it's important to realize that when we're emotional, we're not rational. There's a physiological mechanism in the brain that literally shuts down our ability to think rationally, or at least it limits it when we're flooded with emotions. And right now is a time when emotions are just running very high. I'm sure everybody's aware of this. And in fact, they have been for the last couple of years. You know, it's really, I look at this time that we've been in like a long emergency. I think Stephanie's back with us. So hold on a sec. There she is. Okay, hold on. We'll come back to this.
I've gotten dropped a couple times during the guided meditation. I didn't notice, and I was talking and talking, and then I realized, oh my God, I'm not.
That's okay.
When did it drop?
Okay.
Off?
Well, it was a little while ago.
Oh no.
We missed. Yeah. Let me try to think what the last thing you said was. You were talking about the second house. You were talking about how that represents resources and currency and economy and so forth.
Right. Okay.
Does that help?
Yes, yes. And so on a personal level, this Pluto, the United States Pluto return reflects how are we dealing with power and resources, our relationship to authority, to be conscious creators, aware of our accountability, to know that we are responsible for everything that we think, everything that we say, and everything that we do. Right? Capricorn is very much about boundaries, about goals, about commitments, about power and authority. So our relationship to those aspects, right? We've talked a lot in, over the years. Leslie has taught a lot about the victim, tyrant, rebel, savior polarity, which is very much the essence of Capricorn, the shadow side being the downsides of the misuse of power and those forces. So looking at stewardship, looking at how we relate to money, how we vote with our dollars, and essentially what we're investing our time and energy in. Right? Capricorn is the third earth sign, so it deals with our relationship with the physical plane on a transpersonal level, with the earth itself, with its resources, and how we are relating to it or not relating to it as a sacred being. Okay, I hope that covers what I was saying.
I think it does. I think you've given us a good overview of that. So, is there any more you want to share about the Pluto return, or shall I ask you some very pointed questions about it?
Okay. Yeah, it's a little hard knowing what happened. I didn't notice when I dropped off the call until a while. I'll keep my eye on the phone now here.
That's all right.
Yeah. So did it come through the talk about dealing with the United States shadow, this country being founded on genocide and enslavement?
I think we might have missed that part.
Yeah. Okay. So Pluto, of course, represents the shadow. And when we have a Pluto return, or when a country has a Pluto return, it requires that we face what's been in the unconscious, what's been suppressed and denied and manipulated. And the United States, of course, was founded on the genocide of Native Americans and the enslavement of African Americans who were brought by the millions, in the 1600s and 1700s. So the legacy of white supremacy and patriarchy, the environmental devastation that has been wrought in this country through corporate domination, so all the different ways that power has been misused as part of the Capricorn shadow, and also the illusion of materialism, the deification of money. In many cases, this country has held money as the gold standard of success. The first question we ask someone often when we meet them is, what do you do? So this thing around status, around power, around prestige, also looking again at redefining that, coming back to the original meaning of the second house, what is truly of value? What do we ground on? What is true wealth? All right, those would be some of the issues coming around for this country, of coming back to our original values of freedom, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, hopefully. And then looking at the shadow side would be questioning economic policies, racial, dealing with racial issues, genocide issues, and so on. So big work to be done. We have a big shadow, a huge shadow in this country. And in many ways, you can see this playing out as the dark night of the soul of this country, and a tremendous opportunity for us to go to the next level. Other countries that have longer histories have had at least one or two Pluto returns, so it's interesting to look at those countries. So if we go way back to the Roman Empire, at its first Pluto return, it was experiencing numerous challenges, very similar to what we're seeing in this country now, a great deal of instability and change, religious controversies, decadence, issues around the misuse of power. By the second Pluto return in the Roman Empire, that was the beginning of its end, when the Vandals had sacked Rome and destroyed its fleet, leading to its eventual collapse just after its second Pluto return. A little more inspiring is England. Its first Pluto return was very difficult, but its second Pluto return was a renaissance, a flowering stage. It moved into a lot of reforms. The shadow side of that, of its Pluto return, was it began its slave trade then, but at the next Pluto return, it abolished slavery, so showing how things can change. And similarly, Spain, its first Pluto return was a great struggle to regain control of its territories or to the expansion of its
territories. Oh, Stephanie, I think we lost you again, my dear. Oh, gosh. I'm so sorry, everybody. She dropped. So my apologies. She'll be back, though. She'll figure it out. We're getting to the heart of what I really wanted to talk about today. So I'll speak a little bit about it while we're waiting for Stephanie to call back. And I think through the examples she just gave of the Roman Empire and of England, we can see that, yes, Pluto represents what could be called a dark night of the soul, but it doesn't mean it has to be total destruction. That's not what this is about. You think of our own personal awakenings that we've had in life, the challenges that we face in life. Usually there's some kind of Pluto activity around that time. We're having to face some kind of unconscious aspect. We're having to look in the mirror. We're having to shine the light in the dark places within our consciousness. And if we can have the courage to look at them, and if we have the wherewithal and the spiritual tools and the witness to be able to observe these things and work with them and go through the changes and the transformations that we need to, well, then we have these flowerings and these breakthroughs into new consciousness, just like Stephanie was describing with England, having a renaissance and the flowering of music and poetry and art and so forth, and the abolishing of slavery. So it's like a chance to rectify, a chance to come back around. Oh, she's back. Hold on. Hey there.
Yeah, I don't know why the call keeps getting dropped. I'm sorry.
Well,
I can't,
you know,
anyway.
I think Pluto is aware that we're having this call. The forces of separation are saying, all right, well, let's throw some curveballs at you and see how you're going to handle it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. So one of the way to work with these long cycles is to look at the intermediary points when Pluto first squares itself, when it comes to the opposite point where it was at the beginning and then another square, to see what were the intermediary turning points. Because each time that happens, we get another chance to make a course correction to make better choices. And so at the first Pluto square Pluto for the United States, that was the period of 1848 to 1850. That was the time of the gold rush, you know, when we were also annexing in this country vast territories, the Oregon Territory, many states. That was also the time of Harriet Tubman escaping slavery on the Underground Railroad and her guiding many other slaves toward freedom, and also the beginning of the women's rights movement. The first women's rights convention in New York was held during that period. And then at the Pluto go ahead.
Stephanie, just to be clear, I know a lot of people on the call don't know astrology very well, so I just want to be really clear. What you're mm-hmm. talking about is a Pluto squaring Pluto, which is a certain configuration. It's not the Pluto return that we're talking about, but it's a different aspect of how Pluto is aspecting the United States at that time.
Exactly.
So still having influence, right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's like looking at the year and saying, hey, there's spring, there's summer, there's fall, there's four quarters, there's four seasons to the year. And those seasons are shifts, right, a seasonal shift. So think of these squares and oppositions as shifts like that, like going from spring to summer, summer to fall, and so on. Yeah, they represent turning points, right? And so the next turning point, Pluto opposite Pluto, would have been 1936 to 37, which was the Great Depression and the Dust Bowl. FDR coming into the presidency and enacting the Social Security Act and many other public works and what they call the New Deal legislations, Fair Labor Standards Acts, and so on. Very important legislation came in at that time. And then at the next turning point, the next seasonal shift of Pluto square Pluto in 1982-83, that was the period of Reaganomics and the rise of neoliberalism. Again, legislative shifts, but unfortunately skewed toward the wealthy. Up to that point, there was a 74% income tax on the wealthy in this country. That was radically dismantled during the Reagan administration, as were many of the safeguards put in place earlier. The social spending programs were decreased, the taxes on the rich were radically decreased, and we're seeing the results of that, the decline of the middle class and increasing poverty in this country. So unfortunately, that turning point was not very well executed. So this Pluto return gives us another chance now to examine all those institutions, especially the economic policies, and to make major reforms to bring to course correct back to the original intent of this country's founding fathers, hopefully, not just for white men, but for all citizens.
Beautiful. Thank you. Can I ask you some pointed questions that I'm very curious about? Is there more
sure.
that you want to talk about before I do?
The only thing I just want to talk about the Jupiter-Neptune conjunction, but we can do that later. Just want to make sure we get to that.
I've got a note to ask you about that.
Okay.
Thank you. Okay. So so my understanding of Pluto's returning to the same place where it was when the U.S. was, quote unquote, born, it has to do more or less with the U.S. being so-called like reminded of its founding principles. Is that mm-hmm. correct?
Yes. Anytime, any return, whether it's a solar return or a Pluto return, is a reiteration or a return to the original intent, the original blueprint that the chart represents. So whether it's our birth chart or the United States chart, it's calling us back to manifest the intentions encoded in that configuration.
Okay, so for example, like if the United States set as one of its main goals in the Declaration of Independence, it was about breaking free from England and becoming its own sovereign country, being free, basically.
Right.
So so would this mean that Pluto might be asking the United States, or asking Americans, are we really free? Are we really sovereign? Is that one of the questions that we'll all be facing now?
I think we can certainly extrapolate that. It's very much about how are we using power. And it's not freedom without consequences, right? Capricorn is very much about responsibility and consequences. So with freedom comes responsibility, right?
Yes.
So
yes.
Not to be, you know, imperialistic or colonial. That was the unfortunate expression of that freedom. But to the responsible use of force. Yeah.
Right, because I think if we look at freedom without responsibility, let's call it power without responsibility, right? We see that being played out in the world right now, where we have lots of very wealthy people and corporations and so forth who can influence government.
Mm-hmm.
So they have this power and this their freedom, but they have no responsibility. There's no accountability to the people of the country that are supposed to be, the government is supposed to be protecting and governing, caring for.
Yes. Yes.
Right.
Yeah. Oh, and we're seeing the consequences of that. We're extincting ourselves. We're destroying our home planet as a result. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. So I think what, if I'm hearing you correctly, what I'm understanding about this is that as we experience the effects of this Pluto return, which is really in full swing, it's becoming full swing now, we're going to have to be facing this and seeing the consequences of this and making decisions about this. Is that right?
Yes. Yes. The planets appear like spotlights. You can think of each one as a different colored spotlight. And the Pluto, as it moves and makes aspects, especially at its return, shines a very bright spotlight on these issues around responsibility, around power, around authority, around the climate, and so on. So think of it as coming into high focus for the next, it's like a wave. So this wave is peaking this year and for the next several years, I would say, through the end of 24 is the peak of this 250-year wave. So very, very much foreground, very much in our face, very much up, almost to the point of where we can't ignore it anymore. It must be dealt with one or another.
So we're not really at the peak yet. The exact point of the Pluto return is going to be more in 2024. Is that what you're saying?
Well, if you consider precession, so it's kind of a moot point. I wouldn't give it too much weight. Think of it more like a wave. You know, when a wave, of course, it builds for a while and then it peaks and then it froths for a while. So it's stronger coming in. And then after it peaks, it drops off more quickly than when it's building. But definitely this year and the next 2 years are the peak, I would say, of this wave, this Pluto return. So think of it as at least a three-year process.
Hmm. Okay, great. So 2022, 2023, 2024, we're going to be peaking with this, which makes sense. It's what I feel internally, and when I talk to people, I know it's what a lot of people are feeling. We're feeling right now that it's pretty intense. You know, it started 2 years ago with the coronavirus thing. And, you know, it has felt like a little bit like a long emergency. And and so now we're hitting a peak of a sort. And it doesn't feel like it's stopping anytime. Whatever it is, you know, whatever this facing of shadow is going to be, it's going to last for the next few years to reach some kind of resolution. Yeah? Oh, Stephanie, it is you again. Oh, gosh. Okay. So let me continue. She's going to be back real quick. So when she comes back, I'm going to ask her about what I would call a dark night of the soul. I feel like, you know, Pluto effect. I know people, individuals who've had what we would consider a dark night of the soul, based on what Pluto is doing in their chart. Leslie was an astrologer, and she would tell me about this, and I would watch it. So for 30 years, I paid attention to these Pluto aspects, how they're affecting all of us. And so with a Pluto return, we are definitely going to be in what could be considered a dark night of the soul. And I want to know what that might look like in a practical way. There she is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There you are. I've unmuted you.
Okay. Yeah. So
what might that look like in a practical way, Stephanie, this dark night of the soul that the U.S. is in?
For the country or for us as individuals?
Well, I guess both. However you care to share, mm-hmm. whatever you feel mm-hmm. to answer.
Well, Pluto is about dealing with the power of the unconscious and bringing the shadow to light. So further revelations, further exposure of the corruption that's been in our political system, our economic system for many years. It's nothing new. It's not like these things weren't going on, but bringing them more and more to light and more
oh gosh. Okay. Stephanie, we lost you again, my dear. So I'll be on the lookout for her to come back. But I think we completed that aspect of the conversation. We got to the point of what I really wanted to hear from Stephanie, and I'm sure what all of you are wondering, we're all wondering, like, so what does this mean to us personally? And I think it's important to realize that we can expect secrets to get exposed. We can expect information that was suppressed to come out. We can expect people in positions of power falling. We can expect, dissolution and rebirth to happen within systems, various systems, the economic system, the governmental system, all kinds of the different systems. I think that's the point of most of what we were getting at there with Stephanie. And I think I'd like to move on now. I'd like to talk about the emotional piece. When Stephanie comes back, I'll ask her if she had anything else to say about that. But I want to continue with the emotions because that's an important part of what we're going through right now. So we were talking before about being emotionally literate and why that's critical and why being emotionally illiterate is so dangerous. And I was talking about how when we're emotional, the brain does a physiological thing. There's a mechanism that shuts down our ability to be rational or limits it. And we've been in this very emotional time. So as we can imagine, there's not a lot of rationality at the moment. And like I said, it has felt like a long emergency. And so, I'll let Stephanie back in. Okay, Stephanie, I kind of feel like we've just wrapped up that conversation, and I could talk about emotions now, but before I do, is there anything else that you feel like saying about that?
Where did I get cut off? I'm not sure.
Well, it was, we were starting to talk about what will it look like for individuals and the collective mm-hmm. of the world, of the U.S., with the Pluto return, and you were talking mm-hmm. about secrets getting exposed and mm-hmm. suppressed information coming out, and so forth. But then it cut off after that.
Uh-huh. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. What it's going to look like, of course, depends on the choices that we make, right? And so the importance of each one of us processing our own shadow, our own relationship to power and authority, our own fears around black and money issues and so on makes a difference. But what's going to happen all depends on the choices that we make. And this is a tremendous opportunity for us to choose again, as the last lesson in the Course in Miracles puts so succinctly. Yeah.
Beautiful. Yeah, that is so true. And that's actually hopeful because it's an empowerment. It gives us the opportunity to make our choices and to do our processing.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yes.
It's our incentive.
Yes. Yes, it's a big incentive. Yes.
Well, I have to say that's a very hopeful note to end on. It can sound very scary to know that Pluto is going to be guiding us for the next few years.
Pluto transits are never easy. I went through, because of the way my chart is configured, about a 10-year process where I had almost nonstop Pluto transits. And it was one of the harder periods of my life, but I came through that with a deeper sense of inner peace and wholeness and gratitude for it all. So I wouldn't want to go through it again necessarily. I would never go through that consciously, but it gives us gifts that are worth the work. you know, and I can say that from the bottom of my heart that it's worth going through for the rewards of that. Yeah. And this country will, it just like it looks really bad right now, like remodeling a house or when we have a healing crisis, you know, and we're having dealing with a severe illness, often things get worse or appear to get worse before they get better. So we're in that messy breakdown stage in order to make a breakthrough.
Beautiful. Well, I agree with you completely. I've experienced it myself, and I love your image of the remodel. If anybody's mm-hmm. ever been through, I mean, just the littlest aspect mm-hmm. of a remodel can turn life into
mm-hmm.
chaos.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah.
For me, it feels like we're gutting the house at this point.
Yes, that's a great image. Yes, yes. And stuff is falling apart and laying all over the place, and it's not been put back. That comes later when the news starts to come in. Or the chrysalis, of course, is another great image. You know, the caterpillar dissolving into the green goo and eventually coming out into a radically new form. Yeah.
Beautiful.
But the in-between stage is very difficult. So important to keep that in mind, that we're in a process.
We're in the green goo phase.
Yeah. Yeah.
Good to remember. And we've got a lot to look forward to, because it is going to be a birthing into this new paradigm of the heart that we always talk about on these calls. And that is the beautiful butterfly that we are. And this is personally, for everybody personally, as well as collectively.
Yes. Yes. When we're in our heart, of course, we make radically different choices than when we're in coming from our ego or third chakra. Absolutely. That changes everything.
Yeah. Yeah, good, good. Okay, well, is there anything else about that, Stephanie, or shall I shift gears and start talking about emotions a little bit?
I think I'll go ahead and shift gears.
Okay. So if you drop away again, I will come back. If I ask you a question, I'll come back and look to unmute you, okay?
Okay.
All right. So we were talking before about emotions and emotional literacy and illiteracy and so forth, and I think where I left off was saying it's important to remember that we're in a time where most people are not thinking and behaving rationally. It's a time when our primal instincts are kicking in, and a lot of people are in fear, and we're in that fight or flight or freeze mode a lot of the time. And when personally and collectively, when we're in a condition like that, it's our primal self that is behind the wheel. And we want to find a tyrant to hate, and we want to find a victim to sympathize with. And that's a very natural human trait. It's just, it's sort of our base nature, our primal tribal nature, let's call it tribal. It's human nature at work. So there's no judgment about it. I'm not trying to say it's bad or wrong or anything. It's just that if we find ourselves in this state, it's important to witness it with a neutral observer. It's important to watch it and to understand it for what it is. And we try our best to have compassion for it. You know, to have compassion for ourselves if we're in it, to have compassion for other people if they're in it, but certainly to recognize it, to recognize that victim tyrant consciousness is, it's the number one process that we're working through as a species right now. It is the linchpin to our movement into this other new paradigm of the heart that is birthing. So to just remember that, victims and tyrants and saviors as well, and rebels are, and martyrs, those five archetypes, they're all at play here. They're all, reacting to each other. So we just need to be aware that that's what's happening in the world. And another important thing to realize at times like this is that we're very, very easily influenced when we're emotional. So, again, this is a physiological thing that happens in the brain, and when our emotions get stirred up and the brain limits our capacity to think rationally, it's our will that can start to be bent. The will can be bent towards irrationality, and we can do things that we might not normally do if we were thinking rationally. And this phenomenon, this physiological thing that happens in the brain, the mechanism, it's well known, and advertisers especially know about it, and governments and media and all kinds of people in positions of power know about this. So a lot of time and money is spent on this very mechanism, and it could be called manipulation. So I also think it's really important to realize that we're in a phase where we can be manipulated, and we are being manipulated. So just to also be aware of that, that that's part of these times that we're in. It's natural when we're very emotional that just happens. So I need to pause here just to say I'm not trying to make anybody feel afraid or paranoid. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm just simply trying to point out that it's very important to be aware of this and to witness it and just to recognize it for what it is. So if we can take a step back, right, and just witness this from the position of the neutral observer, then we gain the higher perspective on it and we're not as easily influenced as we might be. And it's then that we have choices, and we can access the heart, for example. We can access the higher mind and our rationality and our spiritual nature. So given all of this, I think it's especially important to be aware of the narratives that we're all being given right now in these times. We especially want to be aware of any narrative that is completely one-sided. So, for example, I'm talking about, like, if there's a narrative where if you say anything different than the narrative or if you even question the narrative, then you're immediately demonized. And that kind of thinking is, if you're not with us, you're against us. And we've heard this before. You know, this has been around since a while. And it's the most limited form of thinking that there is. It's not rational. So, like, for example, we're not even going to listen to what you have to say, so we're cutting you off, and we're not going to allow you to ask questions, and we're not going to allow you to share your opinion, because if you're not with us, you're against us. So this is the absolute worst thing we can do, is to stop dialogue. The most important thing at times like this is to keep talking with each other. And I know many, many spiritual masters talk about this, like, the Dalai Lama is one, for example. He emphasizes this principle a lot, to keep talking. It's one of the most childish things we can do, is to stop a dialogue and to give somebody the silent treatment. That's incredibly immature. So it's that kind of black and white thinking that's not rational, it's emotional. And if we're thinking rationally, we would realize how important it is to let the other person speak. You know, even if we think they might be bad and wrong and even evil, then it's going to come out and it's going to be obvious when they speak about it. Everybody will hear it, right? And they'll expose themselves. So logically, we would say, well, of course we need to let them speak, right? So the emotional thing to do would be to censor them, to not listen, to not let them say anything, because we believe they're evil or they're spreading misinformation, and they should be silenced. So just to be clear, I really want to be clear here. I'm not, because I know this is a contentious subject and people can get really upset. So I'm not talking about political parties. I'm not talking about liberals or conservatives. I'm not talking about right or left, anything like that. What I'm talking about is the foundational principles of creating peace in the world and within ourselves. And in the third density, in third dimension, however you like to call it, it's called diplomacy. That is the word. So we're in a time where most people are not able to talk with each other. For the past 2 years, most people haven't wanted to listen to other people, right? Most people want to share their own opinions. We want to win arguments. We want to be right. And so how many times have you come across that in the past couple of years? How many times have you wanted to be able to just, you know, make people be quiet and drop your truth bomb and have everybody see how right you are, you know? if we think about that, just think about it for a moment. If we're trying to win arguments, if we're trying to make our own opinions more important than other people's opinions and make our own voice louder than others and not listen to others, then isn't that the energy of war? Isn't that the energy of war inside us? Even if it's just subtle, you know, and I have no doubt that for everybody listening to this call, if that's in there, it's very subtle, you know, because we've worked on ourselves. We're people of peace. And so, of course, it would be subtle. It wouldn't be gross within people who have been on a spiritual path for a while. We would hope anyway. But I have to just, this is kind of the point of the conversation around emotions, is that isn't that what's happening in a war? It's that we can't talk something through with another country or another race or some group of some kind. So we have to dominate them and we have to show them we're right. And I'm not, okay, just to be really clear, I'm not saying that we're bad and we're wrong if we discover this about ourselves. You know, if we look in the mirror and we see that we have a desire somewhere inside us to make people shut up and listen to our brilliance. Even if it's subtle, then we can still just witness that. We can just be aware of it, just gently putting our attention on it and being compassionate and forgiving with ourselves and just acknowledging that it's there, not judging it anyway. But it would be a small dose of the war energy if we find that within us. And so if you multiply that by many, many thousands of people in a country, we can understand why countries would go to war, right? That makes sense. So I guess to conclude on that subject, I want to say what we can do is we can use our spiritual practices to make a difference and to clear our own consciousness and to do our part inwardly to move through times like this. So we can do all the things we know, like we practice witnessing, witnessing what within us and outside of us. And if you happen to be brand new to Core Light, I talk about witnessing a lot, so I won't talk about it right now, but it's in our book called The Marriage of Spirit. It's one of the most powerful practices anybody can do on the planet. And it's about calling in that higher part of us, that part that witnesses from a neutral observer perspective and is just seeing what is, allowing what is, loving whatever is there. And we can journal about what we see. We journal about all this stuff. It's very helpful to make it conscious. We can process any places inside of us where we're holding that energy of domination and needing to prove that we're right. Emotionally, we can allow ourselves to, you know, to just allow the emotions to be with us and to let them rip through us and then to let them leave. Because just to be super, super clear, I'm not saying that, for example, like being angry is bad or wrong. If we get angry at somebody, it's not bad or wrong. It's very important to allow the anger. The truth of these times that we're in right now is if we're not feeling angry about some of the things happening in the world, then there's probably something wrong with us. You know, it's very, very natural right now to feel angry as well as sad and to grieve. All these things, it's so important to allow those things, to let the heart have its due and to witness it and let it pass through and then move on. It's just that if we're in those states all the time, like if we're angry all the time or we're constantly grieving for very, very long periods, and then we've got some other processing work to do, some shadow work to do. Let's say Pluto is working on us, so we need to engage it and help it move through. So, Stephanie, you're still with us. I'm going to unmute you, and I wonder, before we move on, if you have any comments about any of that. Let me just unmute you.
Just to echo that, there are waves right now that are sensitizing us to energy and making us more open energetically, so even easier to pick up the collective fear that's rampant right now. Often we're picking up things that aren't even ours but are passing through our field, so to remember what one tool that I was taught that was really helpful to me is if I suddenly start feeling angry or tired or off, I ask, what part of this is mine? What percentage of this is mine? And I trust the first thing that pops into my head. And often it's 5, 10%, or zero. Something, just kind of energetic flotsam going through my awareness. That helps me stay in my witness. I still have to experience it and let it, but it's easier to let it move through rather than start to figure what am I doing? What does this mean? What is, a lot of it we don't ever have to process. It's not ours to process unless we want to. So to be aware that there's extra bandwidth right now, we're more open energetically, and so it's easier to pick up other people's feelings and especially fear right now for the next, especially through the end of May. It's always that case, but especially this spring.
Thank you. So I feel like we should probably shift gears, Stephanie. Why don't we talk about the Pluto-Uranus transits and the changing of the gods series. Let me share with everybody before you speak. I'll just share with everybody that there's this very important online documentary series. In case you don't know about it, we wanted to share it with you. It's called The Changing of the Gods, and you can learn about it at changingofthegodsseries.com. And there are 9 episodes, and they're all free right now. It's their first showing. It's already about halfway through, but you can still catch the second half. I think it ends on maybe Thursday this week. But it's an exploration of the connection between these massive shifts in human behavior that we're going through today and the movement of the planets as they associate with that. So specifically, it's about the really extraordinary power of Pluto and Uranus, and the amazing parallels that happen throughout history whenever these two planets come together. There are always rebellions and protests and all kinds of social unrest. So would you like to comment on any of that, Stephanie?
I think you summed it up beautifully, and watching those videos is a great illustration with images, footage of movements and so on. So I think you said it perfectly. Yeah.
And no, go ahead, please.
Well, other than Uranus and Pluto were last conjunct in the 60s. And then in 2020, we had, in some ways, an even more potent conjunction involving Pluto, Saturn, and Jupiter. Again, this one is in Capricorn, which we talked about earlier, being about responsibility, power, authority, and so on. So there was an initiation in 2020, not only even if we didn't have the coronavirus, there would have been something that would have been a global event bringing up the issues around Capricorn stuff, around power, responsibility, stewardship, all the things that we talked about earlier. And that only occurs every 735 years, a very even more rare than the Uranus-Pluto conjunction, which is approximately every 122 years. So,
did you say 723 years? Is that what you said?
735 years. Yes. The last time Jupiter, Saturn, and Pluto were together in Capricorn was in the late 1200s. I think it was 1285,
wow.
1286. So the ending of an era, and to go back to the last time, of course, it's way back in history, but that was the beginning of mechanized time when the clocks were first, clocks were, you know, coming into church towers. So we began shifting from time based on the natural cycles and seasons to mechanized time. It was also the beginning of Marco Polo's journey to the east, to the Silk Road, the increased trade between east and west, and the treasures that he brought back that revolutionized Western culture and vice versa. And it was also the beginning of our modern economic system. So 2020 was the return, you could say, of that period to those issues around our relationship to time, to trade, money, and to the earth itself. Right? So no surprise, we were watching that coming in 2020. Not many people predicted a pandemic, but we were all watching going, something's going to happen on a global scale. I thought it was going to be disclosure, you know, that we have, you know, our connection with other life forms on other planets. And that's happened kind of below the radar in the last couple of years. There's been more release from the U.S. government, but it's been overshadowed by the coronavirus fear. So, yes, so there was a huge initiation in 2020. Yeah. Go ahead.
Well, how interesting about time, you know, you're talking about the clocks being brought into existence. And I remember hearing that, you know, this new paradigm of the heart that we're talking about, the shift of ages that we're going through is going to be so massive, so extreme, so extraordinary that we'll actually have a new way of marking time.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And maybe the
like a new, almost like, you know, a new year one sort of thing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think a new perception or a new relationship with time. That's mm-hmm. hard to imagine from where we are now. We make a dimensional
right.
shift. It's hard to make that leap. Yes. Yeah.
Yes, it is. Yeah.
Yeah. And we're getting, I think, a sneak preview of that in the next few months. In April, we have another important alignment coming in that only occurs once every 166 years. Okay, so once in a lifetime alignment, you know, for us, and that is Jupiter conjunct Neptune in Pisces. Okay, Jupiter is the planet that deals with perception, our sense of understanding of reality, how we frame things, the meaning that we attribute to our experience, our expansion of consciousness. And then Neptune is the planet that goes with Pisces, the last sign of the zodiac, about transcendence, about timelessness, about enlightenment, about returning to the source. In the sign that it rules, so it makes it even stronger to have these two planets. Jupiter is the old ruler of Pisces, the planet that went with it. Neptune is the more modern ruler of Pisces. Together, they build this huge wave of grace that we can ride a long way. We're already on the surfboard. The wave is already building. It peaks in mid-April and continues, I think, until the end of May, as it's augmented by Venus will move into Pisces, Mars will move into Pisces, kind of continuing that wave until the end of May. So it's a very profound opportunity for all of us to experience this new relationship to time, to go into these more expanded states of consciousness, more unity consciousness, through whatever way our practice is, through meditation, you know, through time and nature, working with the arts, dream work, any form of divination, you know, many ways to enter those luminal spaces. But we have this wonderful wave of grace right now that is like wind at our back to open to these more expanded states of consciousness. With that comes, of course, the challenges, being more sensitive, more aware of everything. So needing to be more mindful of what we expose ourselves to, the images that we take in. We have a thinner skin psychically with this energy. So that's good in some ways, not challenging in others. We can't tolerate as much stimulation, or it'll feel more stressful than it might have in the past because we're so open. If you ever come out of a profound meditation and you know, had a phone call and got jolted, that kind of experience where, oh my God, you know, it feels like too much. So being able to be kind and gentle with ourselves, that we're in this dissolution process, or could be if we want to be. If we're not aware of this wave, we're not able to work with it consciously, then we get the shadow side, which is escapism, addiction, codependency, martyrdom, losing ourselves in inappropriate ways. This is a great energy for merging, and we want to be choosing to merge with the divine, not with something that doesn't deserve to be merged with, right? So it's a very profound experience and opportunity that is good to know about. We might feel more spacey. We might feel less grounded, you know, more forgetful. That's normal. It's right brain energy, so it can be challenging, like, to balance our checkbooks or to keep numbers straight. So to just be aware of that kind of shift, that we're not losing our minds. In a sense, it's turning the volume down on our left brain and turning the volume way up on our right brain. So any kind of creativity, any kind of intuition, inner guidance is more accessible. The muses are on standby. Our guides are always there, of course. But it expands our connection and widens the doors of perception, you could say. So it's a beautiful and rare opportunity these next few months to make big leaps forward in our awareness and take big steps forward on our path.
Wow. Well, I was going to say, it just sounds like such a ripe opportunity for our own awakening.
Yes. Yes.
Beautiful.
And we can think back, of course, we haven't experienced this in our lifetime, but every 13 years, approximately, Jupiter and Neptune come together. And so we can look back at the previous conjunction. They would be in different signs, so different flavors, but still that opportunity to expand our awareness. So the last time it occurred was in 2009. And we might have experienced it in the beginning of 2010 because there were three passes that year. So it was most of 2009, but then somewhat into 2010. The previous time was 1997, and then before that 1984, and before that 1971. And if you're older, you want to go back 13 years before that, you can do that. But 1971, 1984, 1997, and 2009 were the last Jupiter-Neptune conjunctions. And I know for me, those were all profound shifts and huge leaps in my spiritual path. Actually, in 97 was when I went to my first darshan and gathering with Leslie. Very important.
Wow.
Huge. And that was my first ayahuasca journey too. Yeah.
Oh, how interesting. Well, you know what else I remembered about 1997 is that was the year that CoreLight incorporated as a nonprofit. We literally formed our nonprofit.
Oh, interesting.
Anyway, and there were other milestones in those years you talked about. These are such great exercises for everybody. I really invite you to take these cycles seriously and look back at those times and see what cycles are happening for you, so that you can use this. You know, we can all use these the empowerment of knowing about these cycles to see what's coming and how to work with it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, Stephanie, thank you so much. Is there anything more? I'm looking at the time, and I know I still want to get to some questions. We had quite a few questions come in and sharings that I'm going to review, but do you have any closing remarks, including I'd like to know about whatever upcoming events or other offerings you have and how people can get in touch with you?
Uh-huh. Well, every 2 weeks, just before each new and full moon, I write an in-depth analysis of the upcoming alignments and how to work with them consciously, and that's available. You can sign up on my website. If money is an issue, I'm happy to send that to people gratis as well. I'll be doing a presentation on navigating Neptune transits in April because it's an archetype that is, for most Westerners, difficult to access unless you're on a spiritual path. You can't dissolve your ego until you've created a sense of self and have the tools and understanding of what that process is. Or you can do it, but it's not very comfortable. You wake up, you end up sleeping on park benches like Eckhart Tolle and so on. Yeah. So really helpful to have the context for that. So I'm going to talk about how to work with Neptune transits in April. That's my website also. But mainly I've been guided over the years to write these new and full moon updates, not on a calendar basis. You know, astrology is actually our original calendar. You know, the cycles of the earth, the rotation of the earth is our day, the moon around the earth is our month, and of course our orbit around the sun is our year. So by tuning into the new and full moon, we come back into sacred time, into this more celestial rhythms that help us remember, you know, our connection with something much greater. And to look at those aspects and how to work with them is by intention with those new and full moon forecasts that I do primarily.
And so how do people sign up for that, Stephanie?
My website is ecoastrology.com, ecoastrology.com, or you can email me, Stephanie with a PH at ecoastrology.com.
Stephanie@ecoastrology.com.
Yeah. You can put that in the chat, maybe. Yeah.
Okay. Wonderful. Wonderful.
Yeah.
Well, is there anything else? Anything else you want to share before we shift gears into the Q&A?
I think we hit the highlights. Of course, we could keep talking, but yes, let's not miss.
I know. I feel like, wow, this is so rich, this discussion. It's like fertile soil that we could just keep going on for a while, but
yeah,
we'll have to save it for another time.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you so much for having me.
Well, I want to thank you so much, Stephanie. I'm so grateful that you were on the call with us today. It was incredibly helpful. And I highly encourage anybody who feels drawn to sign up for Stephanie's newsletter and attend any of her offerings that she's offering.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so it's time for the Q&A portion of our call, and I realize we're very short on time. I apologize, but let's do what we can. In case you're new to this, the way it works is that you can email questions or sharing in advance to courses@corelight.org. And if you're on the web call, you can type your questions on the Q&A board, and those will be for next month's call. It's not possible for me to get to all the questions, but I do read them all, and I get to as many of them as I can. And just know that if your question doesn't get answered here, it'll always get answered in some capacity. I might answer it on the next month's call if there's time, or it comes from another source in a dream or a book or another person or something. So let me jump to the questions here. I'm just getting my notes up. The first one is from Mark. Mark says, there seems to be a clear choice now between choosing the light that seems to be flooding the world and choosing the feelings of hopelessness, which is more prevalent within the 3D as I watch what apparently is the sacking of the Ukraine. I cannot witness the continued bombing, so I have stopped watching the news for now. I know there's more to the story than what is being reported by the media, so I'm neither believing nor disbelieving. The light makes it much easier to hold this perspective. I'm visualizing the light enveloping the world, knowing there is another way. However, as I imagine threats of nuclear escalation, it requires me to spend more and more time meditating, breathing, and practicing mindfulness in daily activities. That's necessary simply to calm my own fears for the destruction of the planet and its inhabitants. This is a very challenging and time-consuming practice, but very rewarding. What do you see in all of this? Wow. Okay, well, first of all, I think, Mark, it's great that you stopped watching the news. I know that the news stories are designed to invite us into fear and into anger and all these other states, like we've talked about, hopelessness and despair and all these very lowest vibrations. And so you're right that there's a lot more to the story than what's being reported. And apropos our conversation today about Pluto shining a light on the shadow, we're going to start seeing more aspects of the story emerging in the course of the coming weeks. So yes, as practicing neither believing nor disbelieving is very, very important for all of us right now. We talk a lot about that on these calls, and there's never been a better time than now to practice that as much as you can. It's not necessarily easy. But like we were talking about earlier in the call today, it's very tempting to jump in and to judge and to blame and to start assigning the roles of victim and tyrant, and to hate the tyrant and to sympathize with the victim, and all of that. It's just totally natural. You know, that is part of our humanness. It's a very emotional time. It's easy to be led into that. And to remember that that's a very black and white way of looking at what's happening. So like we often talk about on these calls, one of the most powerful practices is holding the tension between the two sides of any polarity. And it's interesting that we're dealing with Russia right now. If you recall, I've told this story before, but it's about Carl Jung, the famous Swiss psychologist. And he talked a lot about holding the tension between the two sides of the polarities. And his students asked him during the Cold War, when there was the threat of nuclear annihilation, mutually assured destruction, it was called MAD, his students said, is there any hope? Will we get through this? Will we survive? And Carl Jung's response was, if enough Americans and Russians can hold the tension between the two sides of their polarity, and in fact, it's the whole world. If the whole world can hold the tensions of those two sides, then, he said, a third option will manifest. And then the third option is a transcendent option. So this is his premise. When you hold the tension between the two sides of a polarity, a third option manifests, and it's a transcendent option, and nobody can see what that might be. And of course, it happened. It was peace. Peace manifested. So we're in that again. We're in that now in a time of war. And so, you, Mark, you talk about spending extra time doing your spiritual practices in order to calm the fears around nuclear destruction of the Earth. And, you know, and that's fantastic. It's exactly what we all need to be doing. And I also think it's really important for us to remember that the benevolent beings who guide the planet do not want nukes going off. They want the Earth to succeed, and they don't want the kind of planetary destruction that would happen if the nukes are going off. So apparently it's not just the Earth that is affected by nuclear explosion, but it's also there's damage that happens at many levels. The fabric of space-time literally tears, and other dimensions are damaged, and it wreaks more havoc than we know. So I think these higher dimensional beings look at us like we're children playing with weapons that are way more powerful than we realize. And so apparently they're doing everything in their power to stop that kind of destruction. So I think it's important to remember that we're becoming what's called a level one civilization. And that means a civilization that lives without war. It's a species that has established peace on the planet where it lives. And there are dozens of levels of civilization, and we're not even at a one yet. That tells you a lot about where we are in our development. You know, to even have war is very, very primitive. So, you know, we've still got a ways to go, but we are going to get there. We're told that it is in our future. We are going to become a species that's peaceful. And it's also important to remember that we are the ones who are planting the seeds for that future right now. We are the pioneers of peace, and we incarnated for this task. And it's not easy, but this is part of our mission in life. This is what we came to do. We're doing our part for peace. We're practicing developing inner peace by doing all these things that we talk about on these calls. And we need to clear all those little threads inside us where we might still be holding on to these small amounts of what you could call war consciousness, and in whatever way that might look for us. For example, the places where we want to dominate, the places where we want to be right, those things that we talked about earlier. And before I conclude on this one, Mark, I want to be really clear. I'm not saying that extraterrestrials are going to come down and be saviors and save the planet. That is not what I'm saying. There's no savior who's coming to kick ass and take names. That's not what this is about. It's not about saviorism. It's not about magical thinking. It's not about spiritual bypassing. It's clear that we've got to clean up our own consciousness. We have to heal our own destructive and primitive mindset. So it means we need to face our fears and all the shadows, shine the light on the shadow and deal with all that repressed stuff, the emotions that we'd rather avoid. And specifically when it comes to nukes going off, I know that the benevolent beings are doing everything in their power to stop that from happening. And so that's my point. I wanted to just say that. So I hope it helps alleviate some of the fear. Okay. The next one is from Herbert. Herbert says, I see the rise of a materialistic and fascist reign of terror all over the world, especially in countries I liked a lot before, like especially New Zealand, Canada, Australia, the U.S., European countries, including my home country. For me, as a 60-year-old spiritual being, this is sad and unwanted challenge. This is a sad and unwanted challenge, if I may say so. What is your approach to this? Should we fight? Should we relocate? But to which place? What should one do who sees himself as peaceful and spiritual? Well, thank you, Herbert. These are great questions, and I guess what I want to say right off the top is you're not alone. I know a lot of people resonate with how you feel, and like you, I'm also aware that there's been this slow creep of totalitarianism around the globe for many years, and yes, it is sad, as you say, and it is an unwanted challenge, like you say, and I agree with you completely on that. So you're asking what my approach is, and I guess what I would say is I practice remembering that this is exactly what I incarnated for. Personally, I know beyond a shadow of a doubt that I'm here to experience this unfolding and, to play my role in it. And all of us, we're all midwives in the birthing of this new paradigm of the heart that I keep talking about so much. And we've all got our own unique individual role to play in this birthing. And it is going to birth, even if it doesn't look like it right now. Like Stephanie said, there has to be breakdown before a breakthrough. It's like remodeling the house. And so I know it looks like we're going backwards, right? Looks like we're regressing into a state of global tyranny. But for the new paradigm of the heart to birth, it absolutely has to be that the shadow plays out. The shadow has to be revealed, and we have to shine a light on it in order for it to be transmuted and cleared away. So the shadow's everywhere right now, and as hard as that is, it's also a good thing. We just have to remember it, and we have to remind ourselves constantly that this is the gift of Pluto, right, that we've been talking about today. So my approach is to do all the things I know I can do to help with that birthing. And I know that the way I can help the most is with my own spiritual awakening. I know that as I continue to practice raising my own vibration, I'm making the biggest contribution I can. I try to spend as much time as I can in a high vibration. And that means states of love and joy and spending time in inner peace, whether that's in meditation or going into nature or just trying to hold that throughout the day as much as I can. And I think it's important to say we tend to think we have to do something. We tend to think we've got to be a doer and get out there and do something. And of course we will, we'll do things to help the earth and we're going to help other people and we're going to help the natural world. But I think really the most important thing is to spend as much time as we can in that high vibration. And that is the antidote to the wave of fear and separation that's sweeping the planet. It's literally a being. It's not a doing. One of my doings is to teach and to speak and to help other people on their spiritual awakening journey. So I do that too. But I also remember to practice all the things, like I was talking about, meditating and cultivating inner peace and all the things we've been talking about. So just holding that loving, joyful state of mind as much as possible. And it might seem like nothing, but it's incredibly important. Our vibration that we hold is the most important thing. And to be clear, I'm not talking about suppressing, as I keep saying. I'm not talking about denying the shadow. I'm talking about feeling the sadness, feeling the anger, feeling the hopelessness, whatever it is. We have to allow those states to pass through, and we name them, and we witness them, and we process them. But then we also move on. We move on when that's complete, and we move back into our high vibration. So if you're new to Core Light and you don't know what I mean when I say processing, what I'm talking about is practicing some simple journaling techniques that we teach that help us transmute consciousness. And I'll be teaching about that in this course that I talked about before, Spiritual Warrior Training in June. I'll offer this online course and we'll be talking about some of those processing exercises. So anyway, that's my role, but everybody's got their own role. And, some people's role might be to fight, like you say. You know, you might find that you're one of the ones you need to go out there and protest, and you need to stand on the front lines and say no. And if you do, it's important to remember to protest nonviolently, of course, but certainly you don't have to do anything that you feel is infringing on your sovereignty as a human being. And you might find that you're called to go into politics, or you know, you might use your skills to heal or to do environmental work or whatever your heart calls you to do. And it's going to be different for every person. And you'll know what that is. And there's no one role that's better or worse than any other or more important. Everything's valuable. Everything's important. We're all part of this collective, and we all came to do what we're going to do to assist this birthing. You also asked about relocating. So, yeah, you know, you might feel called to relocate. I know many people who are doing that. A lot of people who live in cities are moving outside cities into less populated areas where there's more nature. Some people are focused on finding areas where they can practice sustainability, you know, in case there are times ahead when there might be supply shortages or, you know, social unrest in the cities and so forth. So that kind of thing might be necessary in some areas, but it may not be. You know, nobody really knows what this is going to look like. There's the breakdown before the breakthrough, like we said, but there's no way to know how gentle or bumpy that road is going to be. And I think, like Stephanie said, it all depends on our consciousness and the choices we make. The transformation into new systems on our planet might be smoother than we think if enough people raise their vibration high enough and make all the necessary choices to make that possible. And I think just about relocating, I want to say this. I think above all, we need to use our own discernment, and we need to follow our heart. So the heart, if you've learned how to tap into your heart, you know that it doesn't lie. And if we can feel that the heart is calling us to relocate, then we should follow that. And we can always trust that we're going to be exactly where we need to be and that there are no mistakes. So there's no one answer for everybody as to where we need to go and what we need to do. But when we learn to use our discernment, our spiritual discernment, to follow our heart, we're always going to be guided to exactly the right place at the right time and to be doing exactly what we need to do. And it's important to process and clear our consciousness in order to receive the clear guidance about all of that. So I hope that helps. I think there are several more questions, and we're after the time we should end already. So I'm going to do one more question. I apologize. I wish I could do more, but one more question here. This is from D. Lowe. I have been hearing two schools of thought on protecting ourselves. I was told that the stronger, higher our light becomes, the more imperative it is to protect oneself. Is it necessary to do rituals, work with crystals, and do prayer to prevent issues? I want to believe it isn't necessary, but maybe for those who can transmute negativity for other people, it would be necessary. Do you do anything to protect yourself on a regular basis? So personally, my own belief is that my consciousness is my best real protection. In fact, it's my only real protection. So I don't spend a lot of time focused on doing things to protect myself. I believe that the best use of my time is processing and clearing my consciousness. And sometimes I'll do rituals and use crystals for various reasons, but that's not frequent, and it's not to protect myself. I often pray for the support and the protection of other people. My understanding is that when we sleep, we can sometimes become vulnerable in certain ways. So sometimes before bed, I'll shower to clear my aura if I feel that I've got something in my aura, and I will pray before sleep to be surrounded by light and love. and I visualize that and invoke the guides to help with that. I invite them in to work with me in my sleep in various ways. So I hope that's helpful. And I'm going to do one more. There was one more question. I'm sorry we're going over a little bit today. This is from Ellen. Because of the international war topic, I feel loads of fear, sadness, desperation. I ask myself if animals, animal ethics, animal rights have much chance now that we need to take care of ourselves first. And in me, I can feel a shift from concern for animals and the environment to the concern for human safety, global, national, and personal. Still, I go for animals as I cannot give up on them, but there is a shift away from them. Could you address some of this complex theme? How do you deal with the danger of global war? Well, thank you, Ellen. I appreciate your question. We're all lovers of the natural world and animals. And so, yes, I feel like you do. And I know many, many other people who do. And so incredibly sad to see the destruction of our environment and to watch the devastation to Earth's animals and the natural world and the extinctions that are happening and so forth. And it does make us feel afraid and desperate and hopeless and all of that, doesn't it? And I guess, you know, sometimes we just have to feel that hopelessness. It does feel like a hopeless situation. And now with an international war happening, it's drawing all our attention, and so less attention is put on those issues that we're facing with the destruction of the natural world and the animals, and, you know, it's just sad. It's just plain sad. So, again, the thing that helps keep me sane and balanced and that I know is the best gift I can give the planet is my own spiritual awakening. So it's about doing all the things I know that raise my vibration, and it especially means processing my emotions and all the reactions I have to the destruction and the disrespect for the natural world. And that's primarily what I do. But that being said, there are also many other things that we can do to help our animal friends and the rest of the natural world. And we call that, in CoreLight, we call that sacred activism. And I know many people on this call who are sacred activists. Everybody's doing what they know they need to do to help the earth and to help the natural world, support the animals. At CoreLight, we have prayer circles. And if you don't know about that and you're interested, you can go to corelight.org and click on the sacred activism button, and you'll see several things listed there. One of them is prayer circles for the natural world. And so I find that that's a very powerful thing when we all gather together to pray for a species, for a situation, for whatever it is. And I could spend a lot more time talking about that, but we've run out of time. I guess it's just two quick things that I would add. We can learn interspecies communication. We can practice it more. We can connect with the natural world more. Spend more time in nature. These are the things that are going to awaken us to our connection with the natural world, to see that we're not separate. And if enough of us do that, it will have a powerful effect. We call it the power of one. And you don't need 50% of the population to do this. You just need a small percentage. And our consciousness at those levels is so powerful. When we're vibrating at those very high rates, our consciousness is exponentially more powerful than the consciousness of people who are vibrating in mostly fear and mostly anger, for example, in the lower vibratory rates. So we just need to keep practicing what we know to do. We need to be in the natural world, love the natural world, connect with it, communicate with it, love it, pray for it, all these things. So thank you for your question, Ellen. I hope that's helpful. I wish I could spend more time on it, but we do need to close now. So I want to take this time to thank all of you for joining me today, especially Stephanie Austin. I'm so grateful for your participation and your friendship. And let's take just a minute here to close our call, to close our sacred circle. I invite you now to just get quiet. If you're multitasking, this is a great time to just pause for a minute and just sit, close your eyes, take a few long, slow, deep breaths. And get comfortable and relax. And breathe. We call on Great Spirit, Divine Mother, Father God, the Self that we all are. We call on all the guides, the teachers, all the beings who surround us in the highest love and support. And we offer our gratitude. We're thankful for your presence today. We're thankful that you're holding our hand, our hands, as we walk out into the world to share this light, to share this love that we've received today. We're grateful for this opportunity to be in the field of love with each other and to receive the gift of this healing energy and light. We're grateful, as we always say, we're grateful for these bodies that we get to wear for a few years. We're grateful for the opportunity to be on this beautiful planet Earth for a few short years at this extraordinary time of change. We ask for courage. We ask for support with being uplifted. We ask for support in seeing clearly, in knowing our heart, being able to shine the light on the shadow and receive Pluto's gift, that we can transmute the shadow into light and awaken to the truth of who we are, which is love. We are love. And so, help us to choose love. Help us to give love. Help us to know this truth. And help us to be love and vibrate at that level. And that includes joy and inner peace as well, those three. And I would add humor as we close today. We didn't talk about humor, but very, very, very serious include humor in this. It's a very high vibration. It's actually an awakened state. When you're laughing, you are awake. So I invite everybody to try to find, in these challenging times, find the humor, find the levity, find ways you can laugh. And I thank you again. Thank you, everybody, for joining today. Send you my love and best wishes, and I really look forward to seeing you again next month and to receiving from this field of love that we all co-create together. So many, many thanks and blessings to you all. Until next time, bye for now.